A call to order. Thank you all for being here. Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, January 24th, 2019. The time is 3:30 p.m. And in attendance are myself, Senator Stevens, Chair, Senator Birch, Senator Costello, and Senator Begich. Senator Hughes has a conflict and will not be with us at all, but possibly later. Anyway, we have a quorum to conduct business. And before we begin, I'd like to recognize and thank the technical staff that we have with us today, helping us facilitate things and recording the hearing. Jenny Foy is with us from Senate Records, Doug Bridges from LIO, and Nate Williams behind us here, behind the screen. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. Today we'll be hearing from the Department of Education and Early Development. We have a presentation by our commissioner, Dr. Michael Johnson, and he's going to be talking to us about what's happening in the department, the state of our education system here in Alaska, including the work of the Alaska Education Challenge. I understand the commissioner may be joined by Deputy Commissioner Karen Moline, Director of Educator and School Excellence Tamara Van Wy, Director of School Finance and Support Services Heidi Teschner. Dr. Johnson, a pleasure to have you back with us. I just want to express my appreciation. We had such a great working relationship in the last couple of years. I'm glad you are here, and please come forward if you would.
All right, for the record, my name is Michael Johnson, and I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Thank you, Chair Stevens and committee, for the opportunity to be here on Chair Stevens just told me is your first meeting of the year. And so what a privilege to be here with you on your first meeting. I'm honored to be here working with this committee. Again, I want to thank the governor for the opportunity and the State Board of Education for an opportunity to stay in this position and keep working with you. Like you, I very much enjoyed our relationship last year and the things that we got accomplished. I want to thank each of you, some of you that were on this committee last year, who have been so supportive and instructive and maintained high expectations for the Department of Education, and that's good for all the kids of the state, and I appreciate that. Today I want to update you on our work over the interim, and eventually in my presentation introduce some new members of the team at the department. I think it's appropriate, though, as I start, just to note that I want to publicly congratulate Danielle Rhea, who is Alaska's 2019 Teacher of the Year, and yesterday we were able to share publicly that she was selected as one of four finalists in the country for the National Teacher of the Year. It's been since 1995 that an Alaska Teacher of the Year was selected as a finalist, and so Deputy Commissioner Moline went up yesterday and was able to present that award in front of all the students at her school, which is the Alaska Native Charter School in Anchorage. And so we want to congratulate her. It's a great honor for our state, and we're going to be really excited to see how that process goes. There'll be a National Teacher of the Year announced sometime this spring. It's also a good time just to remind us that in 2018 we had the Paraprofessional of the Year from Alaska, and that was Sherry Shaw from Tenaya Elementary in Wasilla. So lots of positive recognition in our state.
Yes, Senator Begich.
I just want to interrupt to say that that school is within my district, and I was able to see her for her surprise award when she was given the award last year. Mm-hmm. When she was the students all gathered in the auditorium. It was one of the most exciting moments because she had no idea that she was about to get that award. So nice. So I'm just thrilled. This is great news.
It is very exciting. Yeah, it's very exciting for our state. So. Well, I want to start by just reminding us that about something that happened just a few days before the Alaska Constitutional Convention adjourned back in 1956. It was February 1956. I think the convention started in November of 55. But just a few days before it was over, one of the delegates rose and said the following: "President, Mr. President, from the very beginning of this convention, it had been my hope that there might be from this convention a statement or pledge to Alaska's children. I believe that it is time at the close of this convention to say to the children of Alaska, in light of this completed constitution, that we do solemnly make a promise. And I'll just interject here. What a proud thing for our state that as we were completing our Constitution, there was a pause to think about the kids of the state. And I think that's something we can all be proud of. He went on to say, solemnly make a promise to them and with them in our future state. And so, sir, I would move that a committee be appointed to draw up a resolution that would be known as a pledge to Alaska's
Committee back to order. We're with Commissioner Johnson, Dr. Johnson, Department of Education. We've got folks listening. You might want to back up just a little bit, Dr. Johnson.
Okay.
Thank you.
I was just reading a quote from the Constitutional Convention of our state, which I think is really relevant and inspiring. And so I'll just start at the beginning of that quote again. The quote is from a delegate that rose, and this was just 3 or 4 days before the end of the convention. Mr. President, from the very beginning of this convention, it had been my hope that there might be from this convention a statement or pledge to Alaska's children. I believe that it is time at the close of this convention to say to the children of Alaska, in light of this completed constitution, that we do solemnly make a promise to them and with them in our future state. And so, sir, I would move that a committee be appointed to draw up a resolution that would be known as a pledge to Alaska's children. This pledge to be signed by you, sir, as the president of this convention, a pledge that would be able to be placed in every schoolroom, a pledge that would say to them that we call upon them for their cooperation as we move toward statehood, because they will be the future citizens. I would hope that this would say that we are providing for them a place where they may practice the faith of their choice, an opportunity for an education to meet today's problems. A country filled with trees and streams bounded by adequate laws to help them in the future and the possibility of a future state that can be theirs, where they can operate as the citizens of tomorrow. So I move, sir, for this committee. And as you all know, I'm sure, how our Constitution states, so the Constitutional Convention ended, they adopted a Constitution, and our Constitution starts with the words, we, the people of Alaska. This is relevant as we discuss any education policy. It's particularly relevant as we discuss any ideas to reform our education system. The Constitution goes on to say in Article 7, Section 1, the legislature by general law shall establish and maintain a system of public schools open to all children of the state and may provide for them other public educational institutions. If we are going to meet the educational challenges in Alaska, it will start with we, the people of Alaska. We will not meet the challenges we need to meet apart from we, the people of Alaska. For those on the committee that may be interested in civics education, this is an important point, a very important point. In fact, civics education and education reform go hand in hand. And in my opinion, if we want reform, we must have civics education. This was pointed out in Federalist Paper Number 1, written by Alexander Hamilton. In that first essay in the Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton said this: it has been frequently remarked that it seems to have been reserved to the people of this country by their conduct and example to decide the important question whether societies of men, I'll add women, are really capable or not of establishing good government from reflection and choice, or whether they are forever destined to depend for their political constitutions on accident and force. Mr. Chair, I think that is as true of public education today as it was of our country back then. In fact, I think our conduct, an example in meeting Alaska's education challenges are not separate from the reflection and choice necessary for a prosperous destiny for our state and country. As we talk about our school system in Alaska, I think it's important to note that though we are 53 school districts in Mount Edgecombe, we are one state. We must have clarity around this idea when we talk about our public education system. We can't be disconnected from the reality that we are one state system, as called for by the Constitution of our state, but we are also 53 locally controlled school districts. And so when we talk about the system, we, the people of Alaska, must do so in a way that supports learning first and foremost by whatever means necessary, even beyond how many hours you may sit in a particular seat in a particular building. So our statewide mission and vision for education should make our local mission and visions more possible, not more difficult. And that's the reality of local control and of a statewide system. So by this time, I think most of you have probably heard of Alaska's Education Challenge that we've been working on the last couple of years. But I think a lot of folks may not fully understand exactly what it is. And so what is it? What is Alaska's Education Challenge? Really, it's just a question. And by asking the question, we also make a very clear statement. It's an inquiry to all Alaskans, and it's an inquiry to each one of us. The question is, simply, how will we meet the educational challenges in Alaska? It's a question for us, we the people. How will we the people of Alaska meet the educational challenges? And before rushing to the answer, let's just take a moment and recognize the value of the question. I've been surprised how quickly some people in our state want to rush past the question and just figure out what the five things are that we need to do to fix everything. But let the question help lead us. Like Hamilton said so eloquently in that first essay of the Federalist Papers, let this be our reflection and our choice. So Alaska's Education Challenge is a question, and by posing the question, we do two things. One, we state the truth. The fact is, we have challenges in our education system. And secondly, we offer hope that we can meet those challenges. If all we did was tell the truth about our education system, that would be tyranny. If all we did was say that we can inspire optimism, that would just be propaganda. So leaders do both. We tell the truth, and we offer hope. So as long as I'm commissioner, I refuse to let this question go unasked. How are we going to meet the challenges of the public education system? So first, I want to remind us of the mission that the State Board of Education has for our public education system, and that is that we, the people, want an excellent education for every student every day. That's our shared destination. That's our moral imperative for public education in this state, that there'll be an excellent education available to every student every day by whatever means necessary. I don't want us to too quickly dismiss our mission statement, though, as just another logo or another gimmick. For far too long, we as a state have performed poorly compared to other states in our country. And because it's been so long, we as leaders must recognize that there's those in our state that may have become numb or passively accepting that there are just some kids in our state that aren't going to perform well academically, and that's simply not true. I'm not saying this is an intentional attitude or sinister, but it's there. It impacts our conversation, and most harmful, it changes our expectation for kids. So we have to state this over and over. We will not be satisfied. We will not be content until there is an excellent education, there are excellent educational options available to every student in our state. So what does that look like? What does an excellent education look like? That's our destination, but what's it look like when we arrive there? So I think the legislature beautifully articulated this many years ago. In fact, I think this may be the full expression of the delegate's motion that I read earlier in the presentation. It is the policy of this state that the purpose of education is to help ensure that all students will succeed in their education and work, shape worthwhile and satisfying lives for themselves, exemplify the best values of society and be effective in improving the character and quality of the world about them. I want that for every single child in Alaska, bar none. So I'm going to display this statement that the legislature made, phrase by phrase, and just pause so that it's a brief opportunity for us to be reminded of the legislature's clarity in our purpose statement. It is the policy of this state that the purpose of education is to help ensure that all students will succeed in their education and work. Shape worthwhile and satisfying lives for themselves. Exemplify the best values of society. And be effective in improving the character and quality of the world about them. So this is our why. When someone asks why we invest over $1 billion in public education, this is it. Our public education system must be purposeful. It must be centered on kids, not buildings, not programs. So how are we going to answer the question? There are three ways we're answering this question. But most importantly, before I say those three ways, I just want to say again, the most important thing to remember is that we're going to answer the questions together. Nobody's going to do it alone. So I'm going to talk about each of these in more detail. But first, through public commitments. Second, through positive trajectories. And three, through prioritized strategies. And I'll talk about each of those as we go through. The public commitments is the we the people. And this slide is supposed to move, but I see it's all displayed at once, so it's a little confused up on the screen. But what we did is we took the legislature's vision statement for public education, we turned it into commitment statements so that we can go out to we the people of Alaska and invite them into this process. And we can say to them, how are you going to increase student success? How are you going to cultivate safety and well-being? How are we going to support responsible and reflective learners so that their learning does something? So we're going to ask that question. As we start education reform, we're going to go back and remember that it has to start with we the people. We can't do it alone. The legislature can't do it. The department can't do it. Teachers can't do it. And parents can't do it alone. We all have to work together. The second part is the positive trajectories. And I want to talk about each one of these. And I'm going to try not to get too bogged down and try to move through them. But this is really where the work happens in terms of making all this a reality. I call them positive trajectories because the other word I could have used is measurable goals. But trajectories implies an upward trajectory, an upward path, and that's what we need in public education. We don't need to decide that we're going to reach a certain goal and then stop. What we want to see is continuous incremental improvement year after year after year. The first one is third grade reading. This is something that the governor talked about often on the campaign trail. There are multiple efforts already underway to address this issue, which I think is really a recognition that even among the five priorities, there is really broad consensus around this issue. I want to thank those that are working hard on this. There was the Reading Task Force last year. There's conversations about pre-K. I know there's bills. I'm sure that there'll be legislation around this priority this year. Some of the elements that will be commonly found, I think, in all the proposals that come forward is some kind of screening. I think that most districts are already doing this kind of screening, parent notification around that screening, professional development around reading instruction, and aggressive intervention when students aren't reading proficiently. What we know is that if a student's not reading proficiently by the end of third grade, everything after that for them becomes harder and more difficult and more expensive for the system. We know that students that don't read proficiently by the end of third grade are likely to drop out of school. We know that if you go to the prison, that many prisoners are people that were not reading proficiently at the end of third grade. And so there's a lot of data that we have about the importance of reading by third grade. Currently, Alaska ranks at the very bottom of our country in fourth grade reading proficiency. So the NAEP is only tested in fourth and eighth grade, and Alaska is at the very bottom in fourth grade proficiency. So this clearly is a goal that we cannot avoid. The department's working with various folks, getting counsel around the state as we gear up to provide as much support as we can to districts to guide this effort and focus energy on third grade reading proficiency. Secondly is increased career, technical, and culturally relevant education to meet student and workforce needs. We know right now that students participate in two or more CTE courses or pathways graduate at 20% higher rates than students that do not. So if we want to increase the graduation rate, we can increase it 20% by increasing these opportunities to get more students involved in these pathways. Already, just recently, the department has approved two new pathways, which is basically curriculum that we can offer to all districts that they can plug in. One is around coding, and we know that coding offers a lot of opportunity in Alaska. Coding is an opportunity for building an economy and developing an economy, even in rural Alaska, where you don't have to ship that product. You can ship it online. We know there's lots of jobs open in the country around coding. Secondly, it can add to cultural efforts for cultural preservation, cultural communication, artifacts, preserving artifacts, communicating culture. I've had several folks share about apps being created right now around language. And then third, national security. So we know coding is a big deal, and we've offered that to school districts. Another pathway is technical writing. We know that's a need in our state. We're also going to increase dual credit. We're going to work on apprenticeships. We have lots of ways that we want to increase these opportunities for students and increase our graduation rate. I will note that I have met with the Commissioner of Labor, and I think we're going to have a great partnership with that department. They were in our department today. Their leadership team came over, met with our leadership team around some specific ideas. We're working with the Alaska Council of School Administrators, who is leading the effort with code.org in the state. And that's just one of the career and technical pathways that we can explore for students that we know will have an impact on graduation rates. The third one is close the achievement gap by ensuring equitable educational rigor and resources. Unfortunately, we also have the largest achievement gap in the country. And the governor's directive regarding algebra proficiency by ninth grade fits in here and is very important. End of course assessments, tribal compacting, chartering conversations are part of closing this achievement gap. The work that we've done around ESSA, which has consumed a lot of time and energy this last year, the Every Student Succeeds Act, the federal law, is really all about closing the achievement gap. And so our new school designations and accountability system is really an effort to close the achievement gap. And I'm sure over the course of the session, we'll have presentations to you about the school accountability system and about the new school designations. The fourth one, prepare, attract, and retain effective education professionals. This is the need for this and the importance of this is highlighted by our problems with retention and recruiting. The recent situation with UAA and the revocation of their accreditation is another indication of how important this area is. And then safety and well-being. There are so many examples I could give. I'm not going to go into every single one, but just recently the department's been working with other agencies to produce a framework for trauma-engaged practice. We know that the statistics of students that come to school with ACEs scores or traumatic experiences in their life are very high, and we know that if we want every kid to be reading by the end of third grade that we need to be honest and address those issues. There's a document that's going to be published that is a great document that will support districts in providing support to those students. There'll be more announcements coming from DEED soon around this topic. And I would also point to the governor's State of the State address, where he expressed that this is a priority for him in terms of public safety. So those five trajectories are very important to focus the energy in the system around some common priorities. The third part of the way we're going to answer the Alaska's Education Challenge is through prioritized strategies. So kids are not wave pools. They don't all crest the same ways. Kids are oceans, and so our schools and education system needs to reflect that beauty and that diversity. And so not every strategy works the same in every setting in Alaska. And as you travel around to different schools and different districts, you recognize how vast and different our state really is from one area to another. And so I don't want to steal thunder. I know over the course of the session, superintendents will be here, principals will be here, sharing great ideas and great things that are already happening in their districts to address these five priorities. We even have some districts that their school boards open every single meeting around the Alaska Education Challenge and how they are addressing these priorities. We have districts forming partnerships around career and technical education priorities. We have districts already emphasizing reading and talking about new ways that they're providing professional development and strategies to intervene for students that aren't reading proficiently. We have some new and innovative pre-K programs that are happening in our state. And each district will be prioritizing strategies and we'll be figuring out how we can help them and support them in that around those five priorities. On the last day of the convention, the same delegates stood up and proposed the following language for a charter for Alaska's children. This is what he said. You are Alaska's children. We bequeath to you a state that will be glorious in her achievements, a homeland filled with opportunities for living, a land where you can worship and pray, a country where ambitions will be bright and real, an Alaska that will grow as you grow. And just another pause. What a beautiful statement. At the beginning of our state, thinking about our future and growing as a state, the founders of our state said, we want our kids to grow as our state grows. I think that's a beautiful line. He went on, we trust you. You are our future. We ask you to take tomorrow and dream. We know that you will see visions that we do not see. We are certain that in capturing today for you, you can plan and build. Take our Constitution and study it. Work with it in your classrooms. Understand its meaning and the facts within it. Help others to love and appreciate it. You are Alaska's children. We bequeath to you the land, the mountains, the lakes, and the skies. This is your land, and we ask you to take it and possess it. Here's the thing. Back in 1956, they were talking to us. We were their future. We were the children that they were talking to. They consciously chose to have a vision for our kids to pass down to us. They handed us this vision, and now we have to choose what to do with it. We have to ask, would they be proud of us? Would they be content? Would they encourage us to keep working on the vision that they had? So they trusted us. They said so. Trust is a treasure, and once lost, it is hard to get back. If we decide to be less clear, less articulate, and less deliberate about our vision now, it won't be any easier later, even if we do have a lot of money someday. So are we trustworthy to articulate and lead a vision for Alaska's children? I sure think so by the work we've done this past year. And this didn't come along at statehood. At Pacific High School in Sitka, this is painted up on the wall, actually on a window. And it's from Elder Chief Charlie Joseph Sr. It says, even from long ago, we cherish our grandchildren. No matter what we value, we offer it up to them. So as a state, we value student success. We value safety and well-being. We value purposeful and responsible learning that results in citizens with character that contributes to the quality of the world about them. So we will meet Alaska's Education Challenge together. We can't ignore our responsibility. And so we, the people of Alaska, have to share our commitments. We have to set some trajectories. We have to prioritize our strategies. In closing, I just want to note that I think it's essential to accomplish the goal of meeting the challenge is clarity around the role of the Department of Education. All of us in this department, and even outside department, must understand the department's responsibilities. Number one is information. This is fundamental to We the People. The department has a responsibility to provide as much information as possible about our local schools and other educational options. Two resources. The department is a hub of resources. We are, of course, required to distribute the resources that are directed by you, the legislature. We also provide resources by connecting constituents, whether that is a school district, principal, teacher, parents, community leaders, students, to trainings, to content, to contacts for other educational support agencies like the School Boards Association, the Superintendents Association, and other educational associations. And third, we have to provide leadership. The department, by nature, provides leadership. And though we have many opportunities to lead, this presentation is just one example by focusing all the energy in the system on five priorities that we can share together. And I want to take this time to introduce some of the staff, the new staff that we have at the department. Our new Deputy Commissioner of Education, with the transition comes new folks, and the new Deputy Commissioner of Education is Karen Moline. And if you can just stand up so everybody can see. Karen has worked in the department in the past. She's worked in the Fairbanks School District, and we're really pleased that she's willing to come back. Director of Educator and School Excellence, Tamara Van Wy. My apologies to the Copper River School District for taking their superintendent, but I've had the privilege of working with Director Van Wy for many years, and the expertise and the passion she brings to the department is going to be tremendous for Alaska students. Our Chief of Staff is Brittany Hartman, and she's going to be serving as Sledge Liaison and also Chief of Staff. And she comes to us from this building and brings a lot of experience and contacts here. So really grateful that she's willing to join the team. And then not new, but just as essential, is Director Heidi Teschner, our Administrative Services Director. And so with that, I look forward to answering as many questions as possible.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Thank you for your leadership. It's just been, you've done a tremendous job. We look forward to working with you in the future here. Even though we've seen a reduction in your staff, the department is not as large as it once was, but you've taken that step and made sure that you've dealt with reduced staff and doing more with less. I really do appreciate that. I really like the idea of the trajectory. So those are great to see and to really help us understand where things are going. The issue of helping kids to learn at the end of grade three to learn to read is just crucial. And I sat in on the task force this summer on reducing on improving our children's ability to read. And one of the things that I heard is that and from several people is that there are lots of ways to teach reading. Are multiple ways to teach reading, and that some of them are not as effective as others. And we seem to have heard that pretty clearly, that there are, if more modern, maybe that's not the right term, but ways to teach reading that all of our teachers are not using. How do we bring our teachers all in our state on board and teaching reading in the best way possible?
Chair Stevens, We know a lot about how students learn to read. There's been a lot of research. We know that there's some key benchmarks that they need to hit in terms of their development, phonemic awareness, phonics, those sorts of things. There's other people in the room that know a lot more of the technical details of that, such as Deputy Commissioner Karen Moline, who's a reading specialist, who will be leading this effort. And so I'm happy to call her up if there's more technical questions. But in general, professional development is going to have to be a big part of this effort, and that's also going to be an element of our work with the University of Alaska system and teacher preparation programs, because there, as with any effort like that, there are, as you said, strategies that are more effective than not. There's curriculum that's more effective than not, and then there's the interventions that come when a student isn't learning to read as they should. any effective program has to be based on phonics, and we know that to be true. There was a lot of study happened during the Clinton administration through the Department of Education on reading first that produced a lot of material that's helpful in explaining that process. So I hope that answers your question, but if not, I'm happy to call Deputy Commissioner up.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. I think for now that's fine, but I just got the impression that something sort of magic happens with kids, that they suddenly take that leap forward and are able to read on their own. So I appreciate your work on that, and I think it's really important that we help teachers throughout our state come up to speed and do the best job they can. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on that question, though, the one of the things I have noted in your own data is you cite in the positive trajectories all students read at grade level by the end of third grade, and closing the achievement gap is 2 of the 5. And when I look at the results from the LKSD, Lower Kuskokwim School District, Nome, Mat-Su, Anchorage, where you have departmentally approved pre-kindergarten programs or early learning programs, those kids, in fact, seem to be, coming, by your own data, coming into school by first grade or kindergarten with more skills in reading, and by third grade continuing to show those examples. Am I seeing that data right when I look at what the department has provided?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, I don't have the data in front of me and not recalling exactly what data you're talking about, but I think in general you can say there are some students that benefit a great deal from opportunities to learn before they get to kindergarten. So we give a kindergarten profile. We know that some students, all students show up to kindergarten with varying abilities and a variety of different skill levels. And so for progressing through kindergarten, some students don't show up with some of the skills they need to start right away, letter recognition, some of those things. And clearly, some opportunities before they get to kindergarten to help with those skills is advantageous.
If I could clarify,
yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I'm speaking about specifically is the data that the department has been collecting through the various pre-K and experimental pre-K programs you've done for the last 8-10 years. Those have been, you know, at least in the data provided by the department, it's showing that where you have applied those particular efforts that are evidence-based, that are taking into account culture, that are looking at the pre-kindergarten experience, we're seeing results. You're seeing results that show that those kids are doing better than kids who haven't been exposed to that within the same districts. So there's data in Nome that shows that achievement by third grade. There's data from LKSD, but it's probably a year old now, but there's data in Mat-Su with their one of their pre-kindergarten programs, and there's data in Anchorage that shows that. It just is hopeful to me that there's a way to meet the challenge, and so I'm hoping that we might be able to continue to follow up on your statement about pre-kindergarten that you did make, you know, in some of the experimental pre-K programs that are there. I'm hopeful we'll be able to follow up on those. Is it the intent of the department in the coming years to continue to support and move forward with those pre-kindergarten experiments and programs?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, clearly, you know, conversations around pre-K, early learning, are essential if we're going to get every student in the state reading by the end of third grade. And there's a number of successful programs in the state, some that you mentioned, some not associated with those grants, that I think we can draw upon and learn from.
That's very good. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Further questions? Yes, Senator Birch.
Thank you, Chairman Stevens. Great brief, great momentum, great trajectory, and thank you as well for spending time with me in the office and visiting. You talked about a single state system, and you know, we have, I mean, we had kids who were in Pearl Creek and Fairbanks and graduated through the public school system in Anchorage successfully, and we're real happy with that. One of the things that we come back to, and is you mentioned one state system, but 53 districts, and obviously 53 districts is 53 superintendents and 53 boards and 53 whatever, and I understand that because but as you know, kind of coming in with this with hopefully with a fresh perspective, is this the way you draw this organization? I mean, it seems you know, and I've heard, well, you know, why do you have 53 superintendents? Maybe we ought to look at something that's more streamlined, you know, rather than having, you know, half a dozen superintendents in a fairly small geographic area. And particularly when the state of Alaska is writing most of the checks for, well, certainly for the rural communities and the, you know, the outlying. I mean, my constituents in South Anchorage write big checks for property tax for education. But I could you maybe expound on that, or do you have any perspective on, you know, if you could kind of clean the slate, is that what you'd want, or is that you see that as the best model to go forward?
Through the chair, Senator Birch. I don't know that I can clean the slate, but I'll try not to make it worse. Okay. So this is a conversation that happens pretty regularly, and I at a time when we are performing at the bottom of every other state, so compared to every other state, we're at the bottom. I think every conversation is worth having. And certainly this one's worth having again, too. It's a complicated conversation, though, because there are 53 school districts. Each of those school districts is required to have a superintendent. But not in many of those districts, the superintendent is also the principal or the business manager and or the principal and business manager and special education director and any number of other positions. And so it's not the superintendency does not look the same in every single school district. So if you, for instance, combined two districts and added more schools and more responsibilities, the superintendent that might have been five things may only be able to be two things, and then you're going to have to address those other needs. I will say, though, that ongoing conversations about collaboration and sharing services, sharing personnel, is ongoing. It's something the governor is interested in, but it's something that school districts have been doing for a couple of years now. So we have school districts in certain parts of the state that are doing some really neat collaboration around career and technical development, Lake and Penn, Bristol Bay. There are some districts that share work with CERC to share business services and those sorts of things. So there's a great foundation for the conversation to move forward. And I think as technology develops, as our state develops, as our economy changes, that it's just a conversation that we need to keep having. Is the current structure of the public education system still fit everywhere?
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I would agree. And, you know, it's kind of like in medicine, you know, the most important person in that relationship with a patient is either the nurse or the practitioner or the PA or the doctor that's, you know, hands on. And I guess in the education realm, I would assume that the most important person in that relationship is the classroom teacher. Granted, everybody's got a role, but I guess I'm always kind of interested and intrigued in how many dollars that we spend overall in education. How many of those filter down to, you know, where the rubber hits the road in the classroom? And I mean, it's kind of a metric that I, you know, just as an engineer kind of guy, I kind of look at those metrics as to the dollars in the classroom. And also, this is a follow-up. We've had a lot of discussion about, you know, distance learning, distance education, and kind of, you know, breakthrough technologies, and I'd be interested in maybe your thoughts and kind of insight on what, you know, given Alaska's vast geography, what sort of thought and insight you might have toward, you know, the merits of distance education, maybe, you know, how you see that role might be coming out in front of us here.
Through the chair, Senator Birch. I'm a big fan of the opportunities for students through distance education, and you know, the technology has developed over the years. It gets better and better, and it greatly expands the opportunity for students to have access to great teachers. So usually when I talk about this subject, I use an example of flying into Juneau, and I have a friend that's a pilot, and he confirmed that I'm not off base when I say this. But we fly into Juneau and land in weather today that would have been illegal for a pilot to land in 20 years ago, and that's because of technology. The technology did not replace the pilot. But it did allow the pilot to do things that he couldn't have done 20 years ago. And that's the way educational technology is. It'll never replace great teachers, but it will allow teachers to do things that they couldn't do 20 years ago, such as maybe I don't have a physics teacher in a community in rural Alaska. Well, now I can take a great physics teacher in another part of the state and connect them with students, not just the students sitting and watching the teacher talk, but connect them with the students in real engaging learning opportunities. Northwest Arctic is doing some really amazing work around this area, as is Copper River, as is several other districts around the state, where students even participate. In Northwest Arctic, I met a student that was participating in a collaborative activity with other students in several other villages around that community. And the technology has progressed to make that happen. We need to make sure that everybody has access to good broadband for those things to happen. But in 2019, students in Alaska can have access to more variety of courses and more quality than they ever have before.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for having me on this committee as a former classroom teacher and parent of two boys in the Anchorage School District. I really am happy to be serving on an education committee after my time in the legislature, so thank you.
We're pleased to have you here.
Dr. Johnson, I was, you know, I found your presentation very interesting, and I have a variety of questions, but I think I'll focus mine back on the one that we first talked about, which was reading by third grade. And this is such a foundational, milestone for young learners. And Alaska, you know, we've been at the bottom of this list for a while, and I appreciate you talking about the good along with some of our challenges, but has there ever been any discussion about declaring an emergency in the state of Alaska related to reading proficiency?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, I've had some of those conversations periodically, and I'll say publicly, when every other state ranks above you, that's an emergency for our students.
And a follow-up?
Yes, please.
It's actually not a follow-up, but I wanted to just touch on your comment about providing students with opportunities that they see relevance in the real world so that students know why we're asking them to learn the things that we're asking them to learn. And of particular interest was your comment about coding. I had an opportunity to take two students from the Anchorage area to a hackathon in Seattle sponsored by the United States Navy. These students were the youngest in the room. They were working with people from across the country, and they were by far, they were the only ones still in the public school system and going through the process. And I feel very strongly that young people are underestimated, and that when given a challenge that they often will rise to it. And so I would like to personally challenge the department to pursue and find those opportunities. I know that many of our schools have those opportunities. I think, the King Career Center is really an outstanding example of that. And having worked with students who have dropped out of school, oftentimes they've dropped out because we have failed them. They're intelligent, they are ready to learn, and oftentimes they're in classrooms with 40 other kids. They're not challenged. And so I see that hands-on learning, and I've seen it firsthand, that the hands-on learning will engage a student like nothing else can. And I know there's pockets of that across our state. One of the things that I've looked at is involving the school business partners more with some relevant relationships. And could you talk about that just briefly, how we move from a classroom of books and paper pencil tests to a classroom of the world where students can be participants in solving some of the problems that we see in our world?
Through the chair, Senator Costello, absolutely I can talk about it. There's no place, in my opinion, in our country like Alaska to provide students with real hands-on opportunities to apply the academics that they're learning in school. And so, for example, today in my conference room right next to my office, I had 15 people from the Department of Labor and the Department of Education, and their sole purpose in that meeting was to develop a plan to provide coding opportunities. Additionally, I think Dr. Parity's still in the room. We have been partnering with them. So about a year ago, I met with the folks from code.org that is doing a lot of work around the country to promote computer science standards and coding opportunities for all students. And so I met with them in Nashville, and they agreed to partner with our state. So they actually partner, they don't partner with state agencies. And so ACS agreed to be our partnering agency. And they have an employee over there, Sam Jordan, who has just been leading this effort. He worked for us, and then he moved over there and has been leading this effort. And so they are already providing professional development for educators right now so that teachers can teach coding. We are exploring ways that we can offer some academies for students. I just in the last month met with both Apple and Microsoft, who are very eager to support our efforts to provide industry certifications around coding. So there's a lot of great energy around this topic right now. And, you know, as I shared with the group, I just went in at the beginning and kind of shared a vision. And my vision is, I think coding is such an, there's so many opportunities for hands-on learning. Coding is a, we know there's hundreds of thousands of coding jobs open right now in our country. And for Alaska in particular, I think, you know, three things really, and I this is a little repetitive, but number one, it's an economic opportunity for students that want to remain in rural Alaska but want to have a job, that want to contribute to their communities, that want to participate in the economy of today in Alaska, that they can do that from rural Alaska. They don't have to move to an urban area to be a part of that. Secondly, it's a great opportunity. We already see so many of our tribal organizations focused on apps to help with language preservation. We know that's such an important issue in our state, and coding can be such an important part of that. Coding can be a part of making sure that we have recording of our elders and them speaking language, of documenting artifacts, and so many things that are so important to our indigenous cultures in the state. And then third, it's a huge issue of national security. And we hear about it in the news, but in Alaska, we have the missiles in Delta. We have several military bases, and we have a lot of cargo that comes through our country from other countries. And so those three areas, I think, are a very strong vision why coding needs to be a big part of effort going forward. This is a conversation the governor has brought up to me on several occasions, and I know is high on his list of priorities, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Costello. And we are pleased to have you with us, as well as Senator Birch. And Senator Begich was on our team last year. Well, the five trajectories are really fascinating. The last one deals with safety. I know you had a you hosted a meeting in Anchorage this last year on school safety. Can you share with us what can be done? What was the outcome of that meeting? Where do we go on? We've got 53 districts. I suppose we have 500 or more schools. I have no idea, but several hundred schools.
Yep. I just want to show. Can I? No, the framework. Sorry. Excuse me.
Sure.
Chair Stevens. So we did host a safety summit in Anchorage that was very well attended. It turned out to be a great meeting, and I just want to commend department staff for putting that on, and all our partners, again, that are in the room, ASB, the Superintendent Association, that helped promote that and participated. We also conducted a gap analysis. So 4 or 5 years ago, the legislature appropriated about $22 million for school safety. But there never was really an analysis done of how that money was spent. And so we did a gap analysis to see where are we today in terms of safety. And that will be coming out in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. The Transforming Schools, a framework for trauma-engaged practice, is a result of a partnership between, I had the list, it's a whole host of organizations led by And provided by a grant that the Alaska Association of School Boards, the First Alaska Institute, the Mental Health Trust, the Department of Education, to really provide schools in how they're going to address the well-being issues and threats that our students face. The department's going to have more information and more news to share that I think will be exciting in the coming weeks about specific efforts and strategies that we're going to be using to address those issues.
Great. Well, we'll look forward to that. Thank you, Commissioner. Further questions? Senator Vage.
More of a statement and perhaps a question, but you have you talked about the importance of the support that you provide to the districts, and I want to just continue to let you know that I think I can speak for myself and hopefully the other members of the legislature that we're going to continue to work to ensure that you can fulfill that constitutional obligation you described at the beginning. Those 60 words in Article 7, Section 1 really matter. And those 60 words get right to the heart of what your job is, and your mission statement speaks to it. The support that the department provides for those 53 districts is the essential component, in my mind, of that mission. And in the past, we have teetered dangerously close to the edge of not being able to provide those levels of support. So I know you will be an advocate for that, and I know that the department has been an advocate for that, and I'm looking forward to seeing the governor's budget and ensuring that that also meets the conditions and requirements of the Constitution in providing that support. So thank you for your testimony, and thank you more importantly for that reminder of where it comes from and why it matters.
Thank you, Senator Magich. Well, again, thank you very much, Commissioner. It's been a pleasure having you with us, and pleased that you have your staff here as well. It looks like it'll be a great year. Also good to see so many folks in the audience that we've worked with in the past, and Dr. Parody, Norm Wooten, and others. Let me just close this with a couple of announcements. We'll be meeting, this will be the time for us to meet from 9 to 10:30 on Tuesday and Thursday here in the Buttrovich Room. That'll be our primary meeting time. Occasionally we may have to meet at other times if more material comes to us. The schedule for the next week will be Tuesday, January 29th here in the Buttrovich Room, 9 a.m., Senate Bill 30 relating to college credit for high school students earning dual credit and the idea of a middle college. And Thursday, January 31st at 9 a.m. here also, Senate Bill 31 related to transfer of credits between University of Alaska campuses, and those two meetings will occur this coming week. Thank you very much, Commissioner, and we're adjourned.